Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Ooh-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. When World War II ended, our nation and our allies had a very different view of how Germany should be treated. Germany was divided into four areas. The capital of Berlin, which was in the Russian area, was also divided into four areas. Russia wanted to control Berlin, and in June 1949, they shut off all ground traffic to Berlin on June 26, 1949. And in July, we began the Berlin Airlift, bringing in food, clothes, coal, everything the citizens needed. So today, we salute all the brave air crews who flew supplies in for months to save the lives of the Berlin citizens. And on July 27th, 1953, the Korean War fighting ended as an armistice took place. Joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. Are you still swimming a lot, Skip? It's warm outside.
Oh, definitely warm, Colonel. The water's all nice and warm. It's some days it's like bath water. I've been going about 4 days a week, and then I'll swim for like an hour at a time. The only thing that really concerns me is the huge amount of snapping turtles in this lake that I swim in. Some of them are a foot, foot and a half long, and I know it's irrational, but I just get scared. At least they're not alligators, so.
Well, or sharks.
Yes, or sharks would be worse, I would think.
Okay, here's what we have for you today. On news and comments by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss sex changes in our military and combat readiness. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will share his warrant wisdom. Congressman and retired General Jack Bergman will join us to discuss our nation's challenges. Then Josh Roberts will present a salute for all Korean War veterans. And Chris Moore will explain how to really leave your presence with your family when you deploy. And Diane Raver will present the movie of the month.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We really welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel. And of course, we'll start with news. Take us there, Skip.
Well, Colonel, we are sending additional warships and thousands of Marines to the Middle East to increase security following Iranian attempts to seize commercial ships there. Defense Secretary Austin approved the deployment of the USS Bataan Amphibious Readiness Group and the 26th Marine Expeditionary Unit to the Gulf region. The readiness group consists of three ships, including the Bataan, an amphibious assault ship. An expeditionary unit usually consists of about 2,500 Marines. U.S. Central Command said the deployment will provide even greater flexibility and maritime capability in the region. Along with the Bataan, the group includes two other warships, the USS Mesa Verde and the USS Carter Hall. The group left Norfolk, Virginia earlier this month. The deployment comes on the heels of decisions in recent weeks to send the USS Thomas Hudner, a destroyer, and a number of F-35 and F-16 fighter jets to the region. There also have been A-10 attack aircraft there for several weeks in response to the Iranian activity. Iran tried to seize two oil tankers near the Straits of Hormuz early this month, opening fire on one of them. The fighter aircraft are intended to give air cover for the commercial ships moving through the waterway and increase the military's visibility in the area as a deterrent to Iran.
Iran is clearly acting criminally or hostily, your choice. This deployment is a reasonable response to Iran's actions. But if Iran continues, and they're clearly working with China, this conflict could grow.
And last year, a Russian-led organized crime group in Ukraine was able to obtain weapons shipped there for the war effort with the intent of destabilizing the country. In other instances, a group of volunteer Ukrainian battalion members stole over 60 rifles and nearly 1,000 rounds of ammunition, likely to sell on the black market, and Ukrainian criminals posing as a humanitarian aid organization illegally imported and sold bullet-resistant vests. The schemes were disrupted by Ukraine's security service, but they also show the dangers and potential pitfalls of the $23 billion deluge of security assistance, much of it weapons, that we sent to Ukraine in 2022 with little or no accountability. A Pentagon Inspector General report shows that in the opening months of the war in Ukraine, we were unable to monitor where much of the military equipment being sent into the country was ending up, showing a violation of U.S. law and suggesting some gear fell into the hands of Russians and criminals. At the time, we had shipped a wide variety of equipment to Ukraine, including thousands of Stinger and Javelin missiles, howitzers, over 10,000 grenade launchers. I'd like one of those for myself, Colonel. Do you think I could get one?
Apply for it. You can buy them in Ukraine.
Okay. C4 explosives and 59 million rounds of small arms ammunition. Larger, more complex systems included National Advanced Surface-to-Air Missile Systems, or NASAMS, newly deployed Phoenix Ghost Drones, and High Mobility Artillery Rocket Systems, or HIMARS.
We have known from the beginning that Ukraine, like almost all third world countries, they're corrupt dictatorships. We took no action to keep track of the money and supplies we shipped them. There can be little doubt that a lot of what we sent over there went for things contrary to our intent. It's time someone in our military took control of what we provide. If not now, then when? This is crazy.
When Specialist Renee Rodriguez saw a woman being viciously attacked outside a coffee shop near Schofield Barracks, Hawaii, it was the middle of a warm October afternoon. There were plenty of onlookers, but no one was stepping in. Rodriguez recalled, "I was scared, nervous, but I just stepped outside of my car and let my instincts take action. I was just by myself. There were people who could have come in and helped the situation. But people decided to just look on instead." Rodriguez, a medic with the 25th Infantry Division, confronted the man who, he said, reeked of alcohol. He was kicking and punching a woman in her early 30s. She was screaming for help, thinking she was going to die. He got between the two, shoving the man, and swiftly put the woman into his car. Quote, "As I get back into the car with her in it, the man opens the door, pulls her out, and starts beating her again. I run out, push him," he said. The woman got into Rodriguez's car again. The attacker smashed the passenger window as he started to drive away. Finally, police showed up and detained the assailant. Rodriguez said he and the woman made it out with relatively minimal injuries, some bruises and cuts from the broken window. He doesn't know what spurred the attack. Rodriguez was awarded the Soldier's Medal, the service's highest award for heroism outside of combat. Colonel, that sounds like combat to me.
Yes, sir, it does. But that is the one award that the Army, all the services have it. It's for heroism not involving contact with the enemy. And that's an armed enemy shooting at you. I got mine for helping. I was in a helicopter crash, helping get the people out. You could get the same thing for helping somebody if their house was burning down. Anyway, I'm proud of Specialist Rodriguez. Too many people won't help somebody being abused. The most they'll usually do is take pictures. Rodriguez put his life on the line by confronting this clearly powerful and angry person. The Soldier's Medal is an appropriate award.
And our Navy Secretary Del Toro said that the major multi-nation military training exercise launched in Australia sends a message to China that our allies are cooperating to defend their security and democratic values. Talisman Sabre began in 2005 as a biennial joint exercise between the U.S. and Australia, but has expanded this year to 13 nations and over 30,000 military personnel. Del Toro and his Australian counterpart, Richard Marles, welcomed ever closer bilateral military ties as they launched the exercise at a Sydney naval base. Quote, "We are prepared to actually operate together in defense of our national security interest and in defense of the core values that we all share," he added. "All of this is actually building muscle memory between our two countries' defense forces, is building comfort and familiarity, and obviously not just between Australia and the U.S., but the other 11 countries that will be participating," Marles added. Fiji, France, Indonesia, Japan, South Korea, New Zealand, Papua New Guinea, Tonga, Britain, Canada, and Germany are taking part in this exercise that ends on August 4. The Philippines, Singapore, and Thailand are attending the exercise as observers.
It is very important that we have this and other exercises in the Pacific. This is a great move. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing. We can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved in getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. I encourage you to check CV4A.org. That's CV4A.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Front Lines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll talk with Congressman and General Jack Bergman. At ease, troops, take a break.
Hey, HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coria with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. Most home invasions occur when people are at work between the hours of 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. Because of this, we highly recommend the installation of a home security video surveillance system. These systems are easy to install and cost only a few hundred dollars. They allow you to monitor your home while you're at work via your computer or cell phone. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit HomeDefenseShow.com.
This is Colonel Denny Gilliam. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. As we mentioned on a show earlier this month, 2 days before the 4th of July, our Defense Department celebrated a male U.S. Army major who has decided he is female, declaring the man's journey, quote, inspires us all, end quote. Major Rachel Jones, a biological man who identifies as a woman, serves as the Army's Sustainment Command's Cyber Division Chief G6 and was lauded for living, quote, her truth, unquote. Quote, her journey from battling depression and suicidal thoughts to embracing authenticity inspires us all, end quote. The Department of Defense tweeted, I have since learned that transgender military folks are excused from meeting weight and physical fitness standards. It's pretty clear that our nation's leaders aren't interested in the large suicide rates or other challenges transgenders have, as pediatrician Rachel Levine, another man who identifies as a woman, was named as our president's assistant secretary for health in our Department of Health and Human Services. Levine began wearing a skirted military uniform after being sworn in as a four-star admiral. Levine is the highest-ranking official in our Public Health Services Commissioned Corps. Given that our military's sole purpose is to be combat-ready and able to defend our nation, we do need to be sure that everyone, including transgenders, are combat-ready. Well, a former Army neuropsychologist considers it a very serious issue when we allow those with general dysphoria into the military. Transgender soldiers taking hormones are more likely to suffer from mood swings and health problems, making them a higher mission risk when deployed. Dr. Alan Hopewell, a retired Army major who served in Operation Iraqi Freedom and who treated people with general dysphoria when he was on active duty, further stated that the effects of medication taken by, quote, sexually confused individuals on military induction and retention could be significant. This makes one wonder just how important having all of our troops combat ready is to the Pentagon. The current administration changed our military's rules in 2021 to allow those with general dysphoria, confusion, and distress over biological sex to serve. And it appears that no studies have been done on how the prescription drugs that are needed to maintain a gender transition may affect combat readiness. As a general rule, Army soldiers who need more sophisticated health monitoring can't be deployed to a place where medical access is limited, Hopewell said. Army policy requires deployed soldiers to be treatable by a general practitioner because specialized care probably won't be available in places, you know, like Iraq. Further, medications that transgender patients need could even cause health and mental problems. Transgender patients take massive amounts of testosterone or estrogen, which disrupts brain function and the entire physical system of the body, he said. Testosterone, the male hormone used to help women appear more masculine, has been connected to sudden outbursts of intense anger termed roid rage. Hopewell made it clear that he was not saying that no transgender people could serve. But we have to recognize that this is a very complicated, serious issue, and many of these people aren't going to be able to be retained. Okay, given this, how much time and money should our military spend finding out if a given person will be able to be fully functional in combat? So how is this working in the rest of the world? Well, a large Danish transgender suicide and mortality study published in the Journal of American Medical Association in June showed that transgender individuals had, quote, significantly higher rates of suicide attempt, suicide mortality, suicide unrelated mortality, and all-cause mortality compared to the non-transgender population. A Swedish study showed that suicide risks actually increased among transgender people after their surgical transition. Transgender individuals are 4.9 times more likely to attempt suicide and 19.1 times more likely to die of suicide than controls. Further, sex reassignment, although alleviating general dysphoria, may not suffice as treatment for transsexualism and needs improved psychiatric and somatic care after sex reassignment. And more people who transitioned at a young age have said publicly that they regret mutilating their otherwise healthy bodies and that their underlying mental health problems haven't been cured and that sometimes they've been worsened by medical transitions. Okay, our military has huge problems in meeting their recruiting goals. There are a number of reasons, but as we've discussed many times, the major reason is the very poor senior leadership, military and civilian. Does anyone think that allowing people in our military who don't meet weight and physical fitness standards and who need nonstop medication just to be functional is going to make things better? Now, I don't have a problem in this free nation if a mature adult wants to modify his or her body somehow. But in no way should our nation, much less our military, in any way support that surgery and transition. Someone in our military who wants to make this transition should be allowed to leave. Anyone who wants to join or re-enter should have to be ready to be deployed if necessary. And I've said that the VA is poised to cover gender transition surgery, and resistance to this change is growing. Indeed, our VA is not providing treatment for fully qualified veterans in a timely manner now. There's many, many complaints. Why would we want them to support another expensive medical issue that's not in any way related to military service? Troops, our military is seriously hurting, primarily due to horrible senior leadership. We need leaders who will get our focus away from being politically correct and focused on critical race theory, as is happening, for example, in all our service academies, and back to getting combat ready. At the risk of being redundant, the only reason we have a military is to kill people and break things. And if we're really good at that, then bad guys won't mess with us. That's called deterrence. And right now, there are a great number of hostile nations out there, and they all accurately see us as being militarily weak. Maybe it's time for all of us to talk to our members of Congress and U.S. senators about this regularly. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom, and now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have this week, Roland?
There was a story on Fox News that said the Department of Defense stuck the family of Marine Sergeant Nicole Gee, who was killed in Afghanistan, with the $60,000 bill to transfer her from California to Arlington National Cemetery in Virginia. Marine Sergeant Nicole Gee was one of the 13 U.S. service members killed on August 26, 2021, when a suicide bomber attacked at the Kabul airport's Abbey Gate. There were also 170 Afghans killed during that attack. The family was already working with a nonprofit group, Honoring Our Fallen. When the group found out it would cost $60,000 to fly Gee from California to Arlington National Cemetery, they found an in-kind donation of a flight and a private aircraft to transport Gee so the fallen Marine would not have to be transported on a commercial airline. That donation was made by a veteran who donated the service to Assistant Honoring Sergeant Gee. No monies were exchanged, and it never got to the point of asking the Department of Defense to cover the cost. Under Department of Defense policy, when the remains of a fallen military member is returned home, they're delivered to the initial location designated by family members. Often, that's their hometown. Their families, friends, and communities often hold memorial services. Then, if a family member wishes to see the service member buried elsewhere, like at a national cemetery, the family must pay to transport the members to that location. They can then request reimbursement for those expenses, along with the rest of the funeral bill. Now, the DoD policy can certainly be confusing, and there are calls right now to change that policy to make it clear that the military will pay for all funeral expenses up front. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. I learned something there. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss our nation's challenges with Congressman and retired General Jack Bergman. Then we'll talk with Josh Roberts about honoring Korean War veterans. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with the front lines of freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for boxing. Box three rounds. Take a break and box another three. Then stand at ease.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer when you shop at patriotfoods.com. We give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriotfoods.com. 10% off promo code FREEDOM and shop today.
Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome back to the show Congressman and retired Marine Lieutenant General Jack Bergman. Jack has seen our nation's government work from several different perspectives, and he served our nation in combat and in many other situations. So, welcome, Jack. Thanks for joining us again.
Hey, Denny. Always great to be with you and the troops.
Hey, and we need it, too. Jack, give us a quick review of your time in the uniform.
Well, quick review, went in the Marine Corps in 1969, right out of college, flight training, flew helicopters in Vietnam, came back, spent a few years on active duty as a flight instructor, and then got out, but I stayed in the reserves. And after commands at all levels, but my most, I think, memorable one was at the lieutenant colonel level, where I got a chance to start up a brand new squadron of C-130s at Stewart Airport in Newburgh, New York. And then picked up my first star in 98, and one star led to two stars, led to three stars, and commanded all of Marine Corps Reserve Aviation. In fact, on 9/11, I was in command of that. That was an interesting time frame. And then Marine Corps Reserve Logistics, and then took over as the second reserve three-star to command Marine Forces Reserve, so all Marine Corps reserve equities, but also Marine Forces Northern Command in Colorado Springs. So I represented all Marine Corps equities, both active and reserve, at Northern Command. Then retired in 2009 and retired until my wife, as my wife said, well, you got tired of not doing anything, so you decided to run for Congress.
And you're in your third term right now, aren't you? Or fourth?
Fourth.
Okay.
Yeah, these two-year cycles go very quickly.
What committees have you served on?
Well, my entire time here, I've been on Veterans Affairs. I will be on Veterans Affairs as long as I serve, because our men and women step up to serve in uniform, and then by God, it's up to us to do the right thing by them, you know, after they leave uniform. So Veterans Affairs, I'm on Armed Services. And this two-year cycle, I have a gavel on Armed Services, and I'm the subcommittee chairman for Intel and Special Operations. And I also serve this term. I went back on the Budget Committee because, as the party in the majority, I was able to get a waiver for a third committee, because I believe that one of the most important things Congress can do is its constitutional responsibilities to create a budget, because without a budget, you don't know where you're going. And, you know, you as a soldier, me as a Marine, we don't waste anything, but especially we don't waste ammunition. And ammunition in this case is money.
Well said, Jack. We don't do a good job keeping track of money. Amen. Okay, let's talk about some of our nation's challenges. One of the things that is going on right now that I haven't heard much about in any of the media is what's going on, the Russians blockading Ukraine from exporting food. Indeed, they've shut down really the whole Black Sea and the Sea of Azov, which is illegal. I mean, there's seven countries that border on the Black Sea, including a couple of NATO countries. How can we tolerate that? Because we're doing nothing, as far as I know.
Well, I would suggest to you, it's not that we're doing nothing. It's that what we're doing hasn't reached critical mass yet. By Russia doing what it's doing right now, by blockading the grain shipments, it shows you how desperate Putin really is, because when you stoop to that level of human behavior, you are like a cornered animal that basically needs to be taken out of the equation. But that's just the blockade. Yes, it's illegal. When you think about law of war, rules of engagement, all of those things that go into when countries, because we have the non-state nation actors like ISIS and Al-Shabaab and some of those others. They don't abide by any rules of engagement. But anyway, it just shows you these efforts by Russia to cut the food supply is immoral. It's illegal. And where the strength of the response has to come from is a combination of NATO, our allies, is the U.S. outside of NATO, to bring pressure to bear in different ways. This is, I guess I'd rather have them doing this kind of activity than threatening to scale up the type of munitions being used. I'm going to kind of, you know, let that settle right in there. But Putin's losing, and the world is going to win. The reality is the U.S. has to be that leader of those good countries, not the only country, but the leader of the good countries who step up to stop this inhuman behavior.
Well said, Jack. That puts it in pretty good perspective. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with General Jack Bergman. Having said that, we are acting against Iran, who has been trying to and actually been blocking exports of particularly fuel from their area. We just sent a Marine Expeditionary Force. We've got some fighters over there. There's four warships either there or en route. We're really acting there. That seems to me like a reasonable response. In your opinion, is it?
Well, it is. Let's face it. When you look at over thousands of years, the Middle East has been a bad neighborhood to live in.
Yes.
It still is. And by the way, I would like to make one thing perfectly clear to your listeners. This is not about the Russian people. This is not about the Iranian people. This is about oppressive dictator organizations who run both of those countries. And Russia is led by a thug, pure and simple. Iran, a small, radical, religious-based group, keeps the Iranian people under their thumb. So we've got the commonality of the good people in both of those countries under the thumb of these dictatorial regimes, regardless of their ideology. We are a country of free people. So are others, you know, other countries in the world. And therein lies the challenge, because we're dealing from different ethic spaces, but we're also dealing, I would suggest you, from different moral bases. And, you know, John Adams said, you know, our country, the United States, this dream, this vision that we have, will only work for a moral and religious people. It will not work for anything else. So we are blessed to live in the country we do.
Well said. And I totally agree with you. From everything I've read, the vast majority of the people in Russia and Iran are just people. They just want to live their lives. They're not hostile to other countries or anything like that. But their leadership is. And that's something that our cultures are so different that it's understandable that we don't understand each other. But it's a goofy, crazy situation.
Well, but, you know, and to just to piggyback and kind of close out the thought on that, when you mentioned the Marine Expeditionary Units, the ARGMUs, Amphibious Ready Group, Marine Expeditionary Units that have been sent to, whether it's the Mediterranean, the Indian Ocean. I mean, we've had a persistent presence, naval and marine presence, all over the world for decades. And it is a signal to other countries that the United States is there to be of assistance, whatever that assistance might be. And it's also a signal that if we need to, we will execute a mission to evacuate our non-combatant U.S. citizens who might be in harm's way in different parts of the world. So we need to continue to maintain and potentially increase that maritime presence of the U.S. military, because when you think about combining with the likes of Australia, U.K., Canada, you know, other partners, to name a few, Japan, that persistent naval presence is going to make the world a better place. Because largely, a lot of times, in a non-warfighting situation, our Marines and sailors do a lot of humanitarian assistance and disaster relief. I mean, there, you know, there's a tsunami that comes through. There's a typhoon that comes through. There's an earthquake. There's a whatever. Our forces are there to help, not to hurt.
Yes, sir. I agree totally. And there's more to discuss about our nation's challenges, and Jack's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. Yeah, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do. Well, twice a week, usually. Then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care.
We are leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted.
Our key to success? You.
We bring your voice to leaders calling the shots so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity.
Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Front Lines of Freedom promo code. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Front Lines of Freedom. We'll continue our conversation with Congressman and General Jack Bergman. Jack, you were talking about the way we're cooperating naval-wise with other forces, and we're doing that in the area around China, the Southwest Pacific. Indeed, our Navy Secretary just announced an operation that we're doing with 11 other countries, Fiji, France, Indonesia, Japan, South Korea, New Zealand, Papua New Guinea, Tonga, Britain, Canada, and Germany, with the Philippines, Singapore, and Thailand attending as exercise observers. That's really good, isn't it?
The short answer is yes. It's good for two reasons. Number one, it enables us to train jointly with other countries in largely what we would call an all-domain arena, so that we as all the countries involved get better coordinated. And let's face it, more exact, I'll use the term lethal in our warfighting capability. Warfighting concepts without lethality, you know, is like I'll just say a hunting dog without teeth. It's not going to do anything. But what these kind of exercises also do, which is extremely important, is to send a signal to would-be aggressors, whether it be small insurgent groups, island-based, that are just creating havoc within their own countries, or the peer competitor like China, who we know has ambitions over a long period of time. And it sends a strong signal to them that, you know, we're ready.
Yeah. And not only that, we're not standing here alone. There's lots of people that don't want you messing with us. And that's a huge issue. In China, particularly, all the harassment we're getting because planes or boats pass through international waters near China, that's nuts, but we're still doing it, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, it's normal to test the others as in other countries or potential adversaries' capabilities and how aggressive can you get. And we know, again, we have to be very careful that a mistake is not accidentally made by some airplane or ship or whatever missile launch, you know, test, whatever, not meant to shoot anything, but yet to test a missile doesn't get so close as it provokes kinetic warfighting.
You know, that's true. We've got to let them know that we're serious and we've got to make sure that we don't do something dumb. And that's hard because even really, really good people on occasion do something dumb. But we don't have a choice. We've got to be there standing up for rights. Is that a fair summary?
No, we do. Because if we expect, and let's use the case of Taiwan, in the end, the Taiwanese people are they really the only ones that can determine their future outcomes? In other words, are they willing to stand and fight? They've got an election coming up here, I'm not sure, sometime in the next couple of months, that they're one of the people running for their president's position could be a person who just says, nope, I'm going to ally with China, and that's the end of it. I mean, that's one scenario that could be out there. And if that's the case, that's not a good outcome. Think about what happened when Hong Kong reverted to Chinese control. Everybody said, well, Hong Kong will remain the same. It'll be like it's always been. No, that's not what happened. So we have to be prepared that in the different scenarios, we can only do so much to defend another country and give it back to Ukraine. Ukrainians are going to fight. They're going to fight to the death for their country. They have proved that over the last year and a half, and we knew that going in. Other parts of the world, we're not 100% sure. So that's kind of part of the balance of diplomacy along with military might.
That makes sense. It truly does. Okay, Jack, let's try another topic. Military recruiting. That's a challenge. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. I mean, there was a Wall Street Journal article published in the end of March that basically said patriotism is down by like 50%. So let's say it went from 60% of our Americans surveyed were patriotic 10 years ago. Now that's down to like 30 some percent. That directly reflects the potential flow of young men and women who would consider joining the military because they don't know what they don't know at that young age. But if they're influencers, their parents, their teachers, those adults in their lives, as well as as they get a little older, their peers, because peer pressure plays a big role in a young person's life. So that since patriotism is down, therefore the propensity for a young boy or girl, man or woman to seek to, sign up with a recruiter is down as well. The only service that is on track right now, as far as I know, to make their recruiting numbers for this fiscal year, which ends September 30th, is the Marine Corps. And others are going to be close, but we just tackled that issue from a different way when we just passed the National Defense Authorization Act here in the House a couple of weeks ago. But we put in wording in the legislation to stop the nuttiness, counterproductive, destructive, actually, woke type stuff in the DEI and cut the funding for that, because I guarantee you, the men and women, the young men and women who would consider joining the military, that's not their priority. Their priority is to become a Marine, become a soldier, become a sailor, become an airman, become a guardian, a Coast Guardsman, whatever it happens to be, and to do what their role could be and is in a lot of cases to defend their country. The good people are there. The Department of Defense has, I'll just say, got its head where the sun don't shine too much recently here in what the role is as far as a good military career. And that career in the military could look like 4 years to a young, person at 18 or 22 just says, no, I'm going to serve 4 or 6 years and then I'm going to be on with life. We here in the House of Representatives on the Republican side are doing the things necessary to help the young men and women who would consider joining see that some of the goofiness in the Pentagon is not long-term.
Well, let's hope that it's not long-term, because I don't know how we're going to replace all the senior people that are playing pronouns instead of military readiness. But that's yet another topic. We're running out of time. Jack, I know that you are continue to work with Alan West in an area that affects our military. Take a minute and talk about that, please.
Yeah, Alan West, a little over a decade ago, founded the Guardian Fund, which is a political action committee to help conservative veterans and minorities get elected to Congress. That's the sole purpose of the Guardian Fund. It was Alan's vision. He founded it. It's been successful over time. Last cycle, in the 2022 cycle, I was the chairman of the Guardian Fund. So I'm out there, you know, talking to people around the country, encouraging them to get involved and support the Guardian Fund, because then what we do as the Guardian Fund is we vet good conservative and minority Republican candidates who are going to run for Congress, and we help them out. And we're very active this year, and we've got some good candidates lined up to support. Last cycle, we had a very successful track record. We do support a few vulnerable incumbents as well, just because the districts that they're in are highly competitive. So we're trying to maintain and grow, most importantly, our conservative majority here in the House. Guardian Fund is an important element of that. And I would just ask any of your listeners, if you're so inclined, every little bit helps. Go out and, you know, Google us on the internet and do what you can to support Guardian Fund, because it makes a difference for the kind of people that we will get here to Congress to do the right thing.
Thank you, Jack. And folks, I agree with that. Alan West and Jack Bergman are two of the finest people that ever served our nation. And the fact that they're working together, I can't not support them. I hope you will too. Jack, thank you for your insights today. Thank you for your service to our nation in uniform. And now I'm proud that we're friends and brothers.
Ditto, Denny. It's we're a couple of old dogs, but we still got a little bit of life in us.
We do. And that life includes some teeth.
There you go.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking about Project Soldier and honoring Korean War vets. Then Chris Moore will present a new way to stay in touch with your family when you're deployed. And we'll review the movie of the month with Diane Raver. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Do 30 good ones. Grab some protein, rehydrate with water. And finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.